Episode 10. Interludes. George Daly heard the distant ringing and smiled. He remembered when all phones rang. They'd actually had bells that would physically ring. That's why he kept his cell phone's ringtone set to an old-fashioned... His face furrowed. That probably was his cell phone ringing, off by his right ear. Next to his pillow? No. He reached out for the nightstand, but the nightstand was higher up than it was supposed to be. Hospital. He was still in the hospital. He found the phone, thumbed it on. Hello? His voice came out as a croak. George? Jesus Christ, where the fuck have you been? George's older brother, Jonah, said. Mom and Dad have been worried sick. I tried to cover for you, but shit, I've been worried too. What the hell's going on?
Hi, Jonah, George croaked. I'm doing better. Thanks for asking. How are you?
Doing better? What the hell does that mean? You sound like shit.
COVID?
There was a pause. You have it? George nodded, then said,
had it. Seemed to be pretty much over it.
Why the hell didn't you tell us? A phone call or an email at least?
Didn't want you to worry. Figured I'd either get better or die.
That's not funny, George snapped.
Maybe not funny, but true.
George found himself chuckling. Maybe a little funny.
Yeah, the doctors told me I got a bit dehydrated. Roger brought me in a few days ago. I'm going home today.
You're going home? Is that safe?
What the hell is safe anymore? George asked. My fever's down. My throat is raw from coughing, but at least they didn't have to put me on a ventilator.
So it wasn't that serious, Jonah said. You could have picked up the phone and called. George sighed, stared at the imaginary image of his older brother, hands on hips, the same way that both Dad and Mom did when they were pissed.
I was busy trying to keep breathing, George rasped.
Jonah snorted. That's a good thing. Mom would have killed you if you'd died without telling her. They both laughed.
And Dad would have killed me for upsetting Mom.
Well, Jonah said, at least you can start dating now.
What? I don't understand.
I've been thinking about this a lot, Jonah said. I was reading the Boston Globe's Dinner with Cupid column, you know, where they set up two people on a blind date and report on it. They're all virtual dates now, which is kind of boring, and not at all likely to really get people together.
Jonah, you're married.
Guy's got a dream, Jonah said. After you got divorced and started dating again, you were my surrogate. Anyway, I figured that somebody ought to put together a dating app, call it something like, I've had COVID, let's hook up. After all, if you've both had it, there's not much of a chance of you getting sick, right?
That's a great idea for an app, George agreed, but a lousy name. You got to come up with something better.
I know, George said. Recover with me? Virus vamps? Hey 19?
Ow, George said. Stop it.
What?
Laughing hurts.
Roger looked at Keisha, lying in bed next to him, asleep. It didn't matter that she was fully dressed. He still thought she was beautiful. She looked so peaceful and calm. He wanted to reach out and touch her hair, pet her like a cat or something, but that would probably wake her up, and they'd both been up late, talking. Roger was definitely interested in having sex with her. He couldn't help thinking about it. But he wanted to respect her wishes, not push. Maybe have a relationship. Maybe a friendship with benefits. Maybe just a one-night stand. Anything. But a relationship would be better. She was freaking out, though, about her mom being sick in the hospital. So he used his brains instead of his hormones and kept the conversation safe and neutral. After all, his dad was sick too, although not as bad as her mom.
Dad was recovering, on his way to getting better. Keisha's mom was on a ventilator in a medically induced coma because her lungs were full of COVID. He had some empathy, some sense of what she was going through. At the same time, none at all. Even if something horrible had happened to Dad, Roger would have just gone to live with his mother. It would have sucked balls to have Dad die, and thank God that he hadn't, but aside from being a half-orphan and living in only one home instead of two, Roger's life wouldn't change much. If Keisha's mom died, she'd be alone with two younger sibs. Her family would come apart. She was 16, almost 17, barely old enough to drive, not old enough to adopt her two brothers, one of whom wasn't even two yet. No money, no job, apartment in her mother's name. How long could they stay there if... No, getting laid was not going to happen. Unless he got lucky and she changed her mind. Or even... Maybe he'd be a distraction for her. Take her mind off her troubles. Was that something he wanted? Sex as a distraction? If he was honest, and if it was his only chance, he'd take it. Not what he really wanted for his first time, but beggars can't be choosers. Roger realized that his left arm was completely numb. Could you lose an arm from lack of circulation from someone sleeping on it? Probably not. He tried to shift, but he didn't dare move much because he didn't want to wake her. She smelled so good. He didn't know whether she wore perfume or if it was her shampoo. He inhaled deeply. Like sandalwood. The sun was hot and the sand was dry. Bree Lopez was playing with the baby while Farid built a sandcastle that looked just like their apartment building. She had a moment's panic when she couldn't find her daughter, but looked up and laughed as she saw Keisha driving out of the surf in a dune buggy. Somebody was sitting next to her in the passenger seat. At first, she thought it was Umbrella, the punk from downstairs. But as the dune buggy got closer, it turned out to be the old man from the DMV. Bree frowned. What the hell was he doing giving her daughter driving lessons? Did the dune buggy even have seatbelts? She was never going to pass her driver's test. A wave crashed over Farid's sandcastle, but the baby didn't even notice. Didn't cry. Julian was such a lovely child. Why couldn't Bree reach him? Why was he getting farther away? The baby was sitting on a floating clam. Farid was waving. Keisha spun the dune buggy around and headed back out to sea. Bree lay back on the hot, dry sand and stared up at the gray clouds. Lawrence Hill stared at the gun on the table next to his cup of coffee. It was the Russian-made Tokarev pistol he'd smuggled back from Vietnam as a souvenir. The army had made him turn in his Colt, which he'd resented at the time, but made sense as he'd watched one after another of his brothers eat theirs as a way to get off base permanently. Rather than invest in counseling, the army had just tried to keep the grunts away from their guns. Hadn't really worked. Now he was staring at his, thinking about it. There had been a patch after Linda had died when he'd thought about it. But back then, the Tokarev hadn't been cleaned in years, and the idea of taking aim and misfiring had kept Larry from blowing out his brains. He'd been glad not to have checked out. Would have missed so much. Missed the grandkids, missed the flings with some of the widows, missed seeing sunrises. But he'd cleaned and oiled the weapon about 4 years ago. Back when his own kids started getting on him about living alone. He'd thought he'd have a hard time finding fresh ammunition, but it turned out that the internet was a wonderful and dangerous place to shop. Now he looked at the piece, sipped his coffee. Instant. Simultaneously watery and bitter. The kids kept trying to buy him coffee makers. Pete actually brought over an espresso machine last time he'd visited. Proudly showed his dad how to use it. The tiny cup was delicious, but the machine itself was too big and took up too much space on the kitchen counter. "What else you gonna put there, Dad?" Pete had said. "It's not like you're cooking anything." Pete had slammed open the freezer to expose all the frozen dinners. Rather than argue, Larry had let Pete rant, and the day after his son went home, he'd taken the giant machine out to the car and donated it at Savers, where it probably made some slumming yuppie's day. Maybe instant coffee didn't taste as good, but it was less demanding. You could buy it in bulk, keep it forever, and it didn't need cleaning or servicing. Lawrence stared at the weapon he'd picked off a dead gook. "You can't call them gooks, Dad," Barbara said in his mind. Even now, Lawrence could remember the kid's face. He'd been maybe 15. Lawrence didn't know if he'd shot him or if Joey Santos had. That's the way things were back then, blurry and clear at the same time. Lawrence looked at the gun, which he'd brought out to clean, but was now thinking of using as his exit door. He'd had a long and good life. 73 years. That's 3 longer than Moses. The kids were old enough to be on their own. They'd inherit the house and the bank account. He'd miss seeing the grandkids grow up, but seeing them on Zoom was like watching bad home movies on television. Damn, he was sick of this isolation, of everybody being stuck at home, of everybody in the world thinking that either he was going to kill them with the virus or they were going to kill him with it. What else was there? His hands had disassembled and reassembled the gun without any interference from his brain. The magazine was full. The barrel would taste like steel and gun oil. He knew that flavor from when Linda had gone, left him alone. Larry slammed the magazine home, took a breath. But killing himself with that gun would be like letting the fucking Viet Cong win, which was maybe why it was the only gun he kept in the house. He put the safety on, wrapped it back in the large white handkerchief, and put it back in the drawer next to his bed. Keisha's eyes opened in the strange bed. She felt Roger next to her, lying warm and cozy and comforting. She snuggled in closer, forcing herself back to sleep to avoid thinking about anything at all. Umbrella woke with a start, realizing how completely he'd been ripped off. Vito had sold him the little off-road ATV for only $800, which he'd claimed was $200 less than what he'd paid for it. They'd been sharing a mortar of Colt 45 and getting stoned. Umbrella had the cash in his pocket, and Vito had given him the keys, told him to enjoy the ride, but get it out of my uncle's garage by Tuesday at the latest. Umbrella had been so happy, he'd wanted to take his new ride out for a spin that night, but Vito convinced him to chill and wait. "Thing doesn't have any lights, asshole. It's low to the ground, and somebody'll run you over like a dog in the dark. Besides, you're too fucking wasted to drive straight." Shit. Umbrella smacked himself on the forehead. Never, ever negotiate when you're drunk, dumbass. All of which was true, but that wasn't the problem. The problem was simple. Where the fuck was he going to stash a miniature ATV?